Hey, everybody. As the co-host of your Chillpack Hollywood Hour, it's always delightful to shoot the transatlantic breeze with the UK Midweek Drive team. Together, we aim to provide the best possible audio backdrop for political sanity in the 21st century. This is Phil Lairness, reporting from the middle ground between science and superstition. And you have entered the podcast zone.
Do you fancy a job working for a 1.5 billion euro business, which employs over 500 people in the Northwest? Well, the next piece of information might be of vitally import to your good self. Indeed, food manufacturers Kepec are launching its first apprenticeship program starting this very September. And to talk to us about this, we're delighted to welcome the awesome soul who's learning and development manager for the Kepec Group, and indeed a case study as well. That's Jane Mizun. How are you, Jane?
Hi, Alex. Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
Now, clearly, whether you're a vegetarian, whether you're a meat eater, whether you're carnivore, the burger is something which is kind of unique to our whole sort of sequence. This is something which is very much there. It's built into our culture now. But talk to us about this particular apprenticeship scheme.
Yep. So we're launching our new apprenticeship program at our site in Kirkham, Lancashire, which is home to the Rustlers brand. Our apprenticeship program is really looking to give young people an opportunity to get that first foot on the career ladder in the food industry, which, as we've seen through the pandemic, is one of the most fast-paced and you know, important industries across the UK to work in. So what we're looking to do is give people that opportunity to join us in an entry-level role. So you don't need any formal qualifications. So for those people getting their GCSE results today, you know, fantastic if you've got all of the grades that you want, but actually if you haven't and you are disappointed by what you see, kind of fear not, there are lots of opportunities and apprenticeships are a great route. So you'll be joining the business in an entry-level role, working within our operations team, so spending 3 days a week doing those on-the-job skills, working as part of our key manufacturing team, and then 2 days a week you'd be spending upskilling, so learning new skills. Our multi-skilled roles, which you can then use those skills to progress through the business, spending time in the classroom, gaining that formal qualification that you get as part of the apprenticeship scheme. So for our entry-level people, we'd be offering probably a level two apprenticeship in either food and drink or in lean manufacturing. And ultimately, we're really looking for people who don't just want to join us for 1 year to get that initial qualification, but people who are actually looking to grow their career with a stable business and, you know, with that passion for food in the food industry. So what we're really offering is a career path through. So join us at entry level, do that initial qualification, get your foot on the ladder. And then ultimately, we've got a number of career paths that can take you through our business into various different functions. So
and one of the things there, Jane, is you've obviously outlined the fact that there is career progression that's actually there. So people who are actually thinking about, oh, I don't want to spend the rest of my entire life dealing with making burgers and such like, there is a clear pathway that's working through that. And you've benefited from that, of course, yourself.
Absolutely, yeah. So one of our core values is ambition. And for us, that really means to develop our own people from within. So when we look through our business, and I'd be a prime example of that, what we've really looked to do for many, many years across the whole Kepec Group, and particularly in Kirkham, where this particular apprenticeship scheme is based, all of our management team, all of our senior managers, they've all worked their way through their business from relatively junior roles. So we're absolutely looking to give local talent the opportunity to come to us and build a career similar to me. So I joined 17 years ago. In an entry-level administration role. So I looked after payroll, I answered the phone on reception, did all of those key duties. And actually, over the 17 years I've been here, I've been afforded the opportunity to do formal qualifications and to work my way through. And now I have a UK-based role looking after our 4 sites across the UK, looking after the learning and development strategy. So I'm a prime example of that. And we've got many other examples like me across the business. So those career paths are certainly there for people. And we're not a business that will pigeonhole you into a role from the minute you join. We give those options and career frameworks according to the skills that you see and your own ambitions.
So as we said, this is open to 20 possible students aged between 16 and 24 from that point of view. So even if you're a little bit after the GCSE scenario, you can still obviously apply for this. Where should people actually go to find out more about the KEPAC scheme?
Yeah, brilliant question. So the scheme is open, you know, to people, you know, beyond just school leavers. Like so many of us leave school, we go to college, we still don't know what we want to do. So, you know, the scheme is open to more people than just that, as you say. And for people to find out more, if they go over to our website, which is kepak.com, on there you'll find all of the information about our business. So we do have sites across the UK and Ireland. And of course, about our apprenticeship scheme, and there's a link there for people to apply.
And in your time with the company, what's been your own favourite particular experience, Jane, in terms of working with the whole thing? Because I'm sure, you know, 17 years ago, you probably didn't think, well, I don't know, I'd really like to work for a burger company. It's not something that, I mean, you know, I can imagine you working in the fashion industry and the sort of the high-end sort of media stuff and so on. But, you know, just from your own sort of experience, was it something which you just thought, well, we'll just see what this is all about then?
Absolutely. I didn't kind of, you know, turn up and think, oh, absolutely, I want to work for, you know, for the Rustlers brand or for a food manufacturer. That really wasn't in my mind. I just liked the sound of the role I'd applied for at the time. So I think the standout moments for me have been our culture is incredibly, it's a lovely culture. So very kind of a family-owned business still. So teamwork's part of the culture. We give people responsibility from day one, so you can kind of, you know, shape your role and take on those responsibilities and really challenge yourself, which I think is critical to your own development. And for me, some of the standouts have been being able to really contribute towards the site and the business as a whole moving forward, and being given opportunities to work on projects that I suppose in maybe bigger, more blue chip businesses than KEPAC. You kind of probably have a remit and you do that remit every day, whereas at KEPAC we're allowed to get involved in much more. And for me, one of my standout moments would be helping to create the values of the company. So our values are passion for food, teamwork, ambition and responsibility. We created those with our employees and I was able to play a key lead part in that. So for me, that's definitely been one of my standout moments over my 17 years here.
Excellent. Sounds very much so. The KEPAC Group is kind of like the Pep Guardiola of the food manufacturing industry in terms of city
like
and so on.
I like to think so.
Always very good. There is only one side, obviously, in the Northwest, as we know, which is Manchester City.
Yes.
So there we are. Celebrate and rejoice that particular side of things as we go into all sorts of other areas. For the moment, though, it's been absolutely awesome sharing some thoughts with your good self today. Jane Meisen, Learning and Development Manager for the KEPAC Group, we salute you. Take care.
Jessica Burtis, flying the flag for North Carolina across the solar system.
Did you know that in 1991, a bill was passed by the North Carolina Senate changing the official proportions of the state flag from a length one-third more than its width to a length one-half more than its width?
Wow, there must not be a lot going on in the North Carolina Senate for them to have that kind of time on their hands.
It's actually quite fun having followed the joys of KEPAC and Jane Meisen and her particular views in terms of manufacturing. And yes, it's well worth considering, perhaps a career in the industry, that we're now able to actually speak for a first time in a long time, one-on-one, so to speak, because normally she's part of a team. She connects with our author of the week, with our Resonance Rewind, with our film stuff, etc. From indeed. Now, I suppose actually one of our several growing band of Irish correspondents. She used to be North Carolina correspondent. These days, she's Ireland. Globetrotting, that's the important thing. Jessica Burtis, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing pretty well. It's so windy here right now. It sounds like the ocean is behind me. It fits your tropical background very well. I feel like, well, I can hear the beach.
Yeah, every so often. I mean, that's the joy of Zoom, you see. And allowing for the fact that thinking is the best way to travel, I thought, let's reduce our carbon footprint and let's just put on a backdrop. I mean, after all, it was good enough for ITC television in so many shows where our adventures would go off from Geneva to Switzerland, to Germany, to Swaziland, to South America and so on, just by changing the backdrop. So, you know, let's work on that system and progress accordingly. Jessica, clearly we're now in a situation where we're told that in Britain, at least, It's Black Alert time. That's the official line that's occurred as far as the pandemic is concerned, which was news to me because I thought Black Alert was something that they simply used in Star Trek Discovery to actually explain where we are, what we're doing, etc. But for the benefit of folk who might sort of think, what on earth is Black Alert meant to actually relate to? Well, it actually ties down to how hospitals have actually declared this is not quite a state of emergency, but then again, it is a state of emergency. Hospital chiefs have warned that the NHS is now the busiest it has ever been, and the health secretary, Sajid Javid, has accepted that the health service will need more in investment. And the state of Black Alert specifically relates to the notion that operations being cancelled and the Delta variant will still infect people who have been vaccinated. And obviously that does mean that anybody who's still unvaccinated at some point will meet the virus. So lots of things there. There are currently 29,612 new cases being recorded, with 104 further deaths. So this clearly is not going away. I mean, we've also seen signs of a third COVID wave in at least 10 states in India. As somebody who's very much at the heart of this whole Generation COVID, you might well say, forget Generation Z, forget Generation X and all the rest of it, Generation COVID. What are your thoughts on this? Because it does seem as though, you know, every day we got to get a little bit of good news, and then it's a case of, oh, we're going to get, I mean, like the States, Florida, California, New York, everything's okay, and then suddenly, oh, it's not. We're all going to die. What is your view on this?
It just honestly feels very strange in how it keeps going in this cycle of, I think it's getting better, and then, just kidding, it's gotten so much worse. And it's so weird, especially, I don't know, in North Carolina, I felt like we were in one consistent wave the whole time. And this whole like concept of waves is like lost on me because it's just always just been insane. And yeah, now I've come to the UK and Ireland at probably the worst time somehow. I don't know if I brought that bad luck over. I don't know, but.
Or maybe it's the best time, Jessica, you know, best of times, worst of times. Yeah,
yes.
It's difficult to actually tell. One of the movies we'll be looking ahead to in the not too distant future on Residence Rewind is a thing called Silent Green, which I noticed is actually set in the year 2022. It's certainly a dystopia, but it is one of those kind of classic areas where you think we're now living that sort of period, which back in the 1970s, of course, was seen as the far future. And in some ways, we are actually in a situation which might be argued to be slightly better, or maybe the same. And some people might probably say slightly worse, but you never know. Well, I mean, as somebody who, America is traditionally seen as an optimistic country. Obviously, that's not the case if you're the former governor of New York City State, because obviously he's gone. So that's another trial from that sort of point of view. But is it something that you get the feeling that, you know, there is a way through this? Or when you speak to obviously your parents and folk back in North Carolina, is there still a case of exasperation that you just think, we just don't know where we're going, we best just pray?
Yeah, I feel like people are, I think they're very tired of just this not knowing, because it is something that you can't really know when it's going to end or if there's going to be new variants. There's so much unknown about it. But I do feel like, you know, people have been trying to point out their silver linings and that there are a lot of lessons to have been learned. About that kind of having to be forced into this like position of stillness where you are a bit helpless and kind of at the mercy of something greater than yourself, and how that will impact you and how that'll affect you. And I feel like it's kind of made a lot of people consider their position in the world and how they feel about life and, It's definitely shaken things up politically in the US. Like, I just think it's so funny that, like, all these movies and stuff, we're seeing, like, 2020 is the apocalyptic year, and then it's when, like, the virus happened, like, really became big. I just feel like, you know, everyone was like, oh, it's going to be, like, the 20s. It's this new decade. Like, we're starting with this new presidency, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then it was, like, pandemic. And
yeah. I mean, it is interesting, and I suppose obviously the next major event that's around, which are people, and I think in a sense it's interesting because I'd say it's almost part of the sin of pride for humanity that we actually think we can control the weather. That obviously with the climate change being there, I mean, currently we're seeing the tragedies that are unfolding in Greece, in Algeria, in California, and all the sort of areas which are connected within that whole field. And there you go, just taking a jet to fly across the Atlantic Ocean. I don't know, maybe we should, it's just a strange, bizarre system. But I mean, that's something which, again, people are obviously very concerned about, and might well mean that what we're doing now becomes so much more the norm, that we still communicate, but we communicate via technology as opposed to the face of the kind of person in person sort of setup that we used to have.
Yeah, you know, I was looking back, I was extremely naive because I remember, like, towards the end of my time at Lincoln last year, I remember telling you in class, like with my classmates, that I might have to go back to the US. It was getting bad. And I remember you saying that you were interested to see how this might change, like, communication and face to face. And I was like thinking in my head, and I'm like, it can't get that bad possibly, could it? And it has.
Or better. Let's look at it being half full. Yeah. It's got that better from the point of view. We're sort of living the dream from that. I mean, it again, looking ahead, we are now approaching, obviously, the start of what will be Welcome Week, in which at present I shall actually be in person in the same room as some of our new students. That's the original schedule. And I think that as far as things are actually concerned for the next few months, because, of course, we're technically double vaccinated. Most of us have actually had two jabs from that point of view, so we've reduced the kind of mortality factors, apparently. Then at this particular moment, we will be delivering seminars in person and lectures probably still online. So again, that's an interesting one. But again, it's that uncertainty and you know, equally there's that other sort of key thing in terms of, we have a number of our students who are coming in from overseas, from in the case of one of our level three students now, of course, coming in from Bermuda, amongst other things. So there's all sorts of other areas within that. And you know, that sense of global travel, which many people, I think, for approximately 50 years or so, kind of took as a kind of right and a freedom, now seems to be restricted very much to, well, if you're not in the government and you're not actually sort of able to, or a sports person, willing to take part in the sporting events, etc., then forget it. You're not going to be allowed, basically. Or if you do go, the constraints are going to be so heavy, you just got to say, why bother? I know it's a shocker, Jessica, but it's unlikely I will be seeking out a nightclub in the near future to show my vaccine passport. It's not going to happen.
Very shocking. Yeah. It is true, because, like, I remember I was apart from my boyfriend for like a year and 4 months, and it drove me absolutely insane that I couldn't, like, the distance between, like, the world had never felt that large, and I had never had that, like, perspective. And
it's like being back in the days of Amerigo Vespucci when he was discovering America in the first place.
Yeah, yeah,
7 month sea voyage.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I need to build, like, a dinghy and, like, try and swim across the ocean or something. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, I don't know. It made me realize how much I think, like, especially in the past, like, couple decades, like, the world has just taken, like, global travel for granted, and how easy it had been. Like, yeah, thinking back to how before you could get on an airplane without a mask, without tests, without all these forms being completed, like, that just seems like such a simple process. And I used to complain about, it's so much to travel, like, you know, it's such a big deal. But yeah. Hindsight.
Well, very much so. And of course, there are folk this year who've only ever experienced, that we've welcomed to the show, they've only ever experienced the midweek drive via this Zoom technology, which admittedly is better than the old telephone system used to be. But, you know, at the same time, has those moments of freezing. Final topics, because I don't think we're going to be joined by hoping to actually connect you with today, but that's happened. He's probably forgotten about it, or he's struggling in all sorts of ways. That's what Ian Sitwell we're referring to. What about the Olympics? I mean, obviously, Team USA managed to actually finish number one, beating China just about in terms of number of goals. For a long time, it seems as though China was in the lead. Britain, of course, coming in fourth position. Did you follow the fortnight? Was it a case of you following particular sports, or was it a case of, well, we just ignored it completely?
No, so yeah, I did. I am back home. My parents will usually have it on constantly, but I was watching it here as well. And it was more of like the BBC coverage, which was interesting because I'm used to just having like a ton of American team coverage. But no, I really liked seeing the ceremonies a ton. Like I watched the whole closing ceremonies and like how beautiful that was. And of course, in the US, like our gymnastics team is like huge. So the whole Simone Biles kind of taking time for her mental health and like the absurd controversy that followed that was like a big deal. But I love watching the Olympics so much.
Well, Paris, of course, coming up apparently in 3 years' time, and then it's Los Angeles.
Yeah. Yes, I hope COVID will be over by then. You'll have to come over to the US to see
it. There we are, 2028. But more good things are coming through, obviously, as far as the Midweek Driver is concerned. This has been a wonderful opportunity, Jessica, to actually sort of put the focus and the spotlight firmly on yourself, really, from that sort of point of view.
Thank you.
It's all good. Yeah. So, inevitably, I've got to put those two questions to you. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today?
Yes, I have. I feel like the air and everything. I'm on a tropical beach.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, there are so many things that we could have actually chosen with respect to this. I mean, one which I have a particular liking for, just because it kind of appeals to my own sort of sense of a scenario, is the old office structure with indeed a shot of the parting bouquet that was actually sort of listed into the side of things from there. We could obviously go into outer space if we wanted to and join in terms of travel and all the other sort of side of things as well. Plus, of course, there's always the classic dragon boat races, which I think can open up no end of quality. And then if we wanted to really sort of push things even further, we've got the joys of Peter Rabbit 2 just being on the back of the truck and actually enjoying Amazing. That sequence as well. So, you know, it's truly a wondrous thing. So I take it then, Jessica, as obviously one of the stalwart foundations of the Midweek Drive team, you'll be back in the very near future?
Absolutely.
I was tired of my lady, we'd been together too long. Like a worn out recording of a favorite song. So while she lay there sleeping, I read the paper in bed. And in the personal columns, there was this letter I read. If you like piña coladas, rain. If you're not into yoga, if you have half a brain, if you like making love at midnight in the dunes on the Cape, then I'm the love that you've looked for. Write to me and escape. About my lady, I know that sounds kind of mean, but me and my old lady have fallen into the same old routine. So I wrote to the paper, took out a personal ad, and though I'm nobody's poet, I thought it wasn't half bad. Yes, I like piña colada. Red tape. were smiling an instant. I knew the curve of her face. It was my own lovely lady. And she said, oh, it's you. Then we laughed for a moment. And I said, I never knew that you like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain and the feel of the ocean and the taste of champagne. If you'd like making love at midnight in the dunes of the Cape, you're the lady I look for. Come with me and escape.
Yes, it does tend to act as an earworm, just listening to Rupert Holmes there and the Pina Colada song. Why are we actually listening to Rupert Holmes and Pina Colada? Well, only because it is the most popular cocktail drink officially. And to actually talk us through why that is the case, we're delighted to actually welcome the awesomely talented Pritesh Modi. How are you, Pritesh?
Very well. All the better for speaking to you with this wonderful background of cocktails you've got.
Well, I feel if you can't work on the scenery of radio, what can you do? Let's be honest.
Exactly.
You are, of course, a cocktail presenter extraordinaire, Channel 4 Sunday Brunch. You are the leading UK drinks expert. Are you surprised that the Pina Colada is still very much number one? Is it all due to that song?
Do you know what? That song, it's been ringing in my head since someone reminded me of it a couple of days ago. Exactly. But it doesn't necessarily surprise me. I think this, this research that we've done with Aldi around cocktail habits is very much in keeping with the current mood of the country, given, COVID, etc. And I think people return to familiarity. And I think the Pina Colada is the quintessential summer holiday cocktail, right? It evokes images of being on the beach and just relaxing and better times. And I think at any other time, maybe the Pina Colada wouldn't have come. It would be certainly high up, but I don't know if it would come to the top. But now that everyone's kind of pining for their holidays and pining for some beach action, it doesn't surprise me that the Pina Colada is there at the top.
I mean, having said that, only 1% behind, we got mojitos, we've got espresso martinis at 18%, and Negronis way down, unfortunately, with 5% for Negroni. What does a Negroni have to do to actually sort of improve its position, basically? I mean, it's the equivalent one of the the Arsenal of the cocktail world there.
Well, look, I mean, Negroni is a very grown-up flavour. It's a very serious cocktail. And I think at the moment, it's all about having fun. I love a Negroni, but at the moment, it's about having lighter drinks and more fun drinks that you can kind of, have in different environments. And a Negroni really requires focus to sit down, and it's got that quite divisive, bittersweet flavor profile. Whereas, say, you look at your Pina Colada, it's coconut, it's pineapple, it's rum, same as a mojito, you've got fresh limes and rum in there and bright light mint. So
presumably the Pina Colada is the equivalent to the kind of Pep Guardiola kind of samba football, etc. Whereas the Negroni is more your kind of intense.
Oh, yeah.
Thomas Tuchel kind of approach to things, very serious, very tactical.
Absolutely, very serious. You really need to focus on one.
I go with that.
To enjoy it.
There are those of us, and you're far too young to remember Tom Cruise in Cocktail, of course, who actually first encountered...
I'm old enough.
Yeah?
Okay, I'm old enough, definitely.
But in terms of mixology, is this something that, again, is engaging and more and more people thinking, yeah, it's all about the shake, I'm going to go for that mixology course?
Absolutely. Look, again, during lockdown, everyone has learnt new skills and got engaged with baking and bread making and all kinds of stuff, cooking in the kitchen. And, you know, cocktails, if you're going to all this effort around your food and drink, you know, cocktails are actually, I think people have found, actually quite easy. You don't need a lot of equipment, and it takes minutes to make, settle down and make a really, really good cocktail. Whereas, you know, when you're talking about cooking, it's a process. There's a longer process. Whereas with a cocktail, it's really, really straightforward. And even something like just a good quality gin and tonic is a thing to behold and takes seconds. All you need is really, really good ice, good gin and good tonic, three ingredients, and you're there.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned, of course, the G word there. Churchill actually said that it was gin that helped build the British Empire, amongst other things. So is gin showing any signs of slowing down, or is it just a case of fundamentally a gin-based cocktail is the way to go? It's the proverbial leader in the pack.
Well, gin is showing no signs of slowing down. And I think that's representative of this, the Grow with Aldi competition, where, you know, we were looking for the UK's next best craft distiller, and Penrose Gin came out tops. You know, we had tastings with whiskies and rums and all kinds of stuff. So certainly not showing any signs of slowing down. And but what's more interesting, I think, is that a gin-based cocktail isn't in the top 10, but gin as a category is the most popular. So again, it tells me people just enjoy new gin flavors and new gin varieties and exploring within the category. And I say a good gin and tonic is a thing to behold, and there's nothing really better than that for me.
Yeah, the Cosmopolitan is one which I thought was interesting, coming in at number 10, and just behind Long Island Iced Tea and the White Russian and, of course, the Bloody Mary. So, I mean, some traditional ones there still around, with, of course, the inevitable Sex on the Beach. I wouldn't recommend it. In at number 6.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I mean, the Cosmo, I think, has always been there and thereabouts as well. It's such a fun party drink. And I think some of this research as well points to people being inspired by movies and movie culture. So, you know, you've got things like Sex in the City, which I know, you know, my wife would watch every day, all day, every day. And I'm sure, you know, that Cosmopolitan that they're constantly drinking in there has lots to say for that. And then, you know, your classic mojitos and other party drinks are always going to be there.
The Adventures of Carrie and Her Friends, not quite so, I mean, probably more alcoholic than what we actually got within the series Friends, but never mind, because you can't, yeah, exactly. You can only do so much in a coffee scenario, it's different entirely. Exactly. And finally, I mean, it's worth mentioning that the Birmingham folk very keen on the Aperol Spritz, really, which was quite interesting from that point of view.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, kind of, I've not been up to Birmingham for about 4 years, but I used to come up a fair bit, particularly around the whiskey shows and stuff like that. But I've seen in the last few years that the whole food and drink scene has really come on leaps and bounds. Even during COVID, we work with quite a few kind of bars and restaurants around Birmingham, and it's been really, really exciting what's going on in the Birmingham food and drink scene. So, you know, an Aperol is just a beautiful quintessential summer drink again, and you know, it's on a more sophisticated side because you've got those bittersweet notes, and it's something to really savour.
And you've just mentioned that clear point there, Pritesh, savouring. What, in your own professional opinion, is the best way to take a cocktail? Presumably it's not a case of, for goodness sake, don't down it in one. That's not good at all.
Exactly. Look, you know, it's all about drinking better, not drinking more for me. And, you know, I'm a margarita guy. Lots of ice on the rocks, and just sip margaritas all day long. But ice is the key to a good cocktail. The more ice, the better. Keeps that drink chilled and cooler for longer, and you sip it, not just down it, because it's got all watery and horrible.
Absolutely. So where can people go to, Pritesh, to find out more about the Aldi results and indeed the cocktail top 10 in general?
Yeah, just look up Aldi, go to their website, and yeah, you'll find it there, and also details of this, this delicious Penrose gin that they've now got listed.
Well, it's brought us around to two neat aspects in terms of the final questions. Pritesh, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today?
Oh, it's been fantastic. Absolutely fantastic, yeah.
In fact, is there a cocktail called the Zuma as yet? Because if not, you should actually patent it and actually get it done, I would have thought. the ideal drink to be sipping whilst doing radio interviews, really, the Zuma.
I think the world is moving away from Zoom, thankfully, again. So I think the fewer of these, whilst for radio, it's great that you and I get to see each other. I think for the rest of the world, we're firmly over it.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Well, the next critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again in the not too distant future, either via Zoom or some other magical communication system? Will you come back?
Absolutely. Anytime to talk drinks with you.
Pritesh Modi, the leading UK drinks expert, not the leading
very
UK
kind.
Drinks expert.
Very
Let's
kind.
Go with that. Take care. We salute you.
Thank you very much.
So maybe it's all to do with narcissism. Maybe it's a case of we're in love with ourselves. That's why we don't have time to actually deal with anybody else on a date. We can actually just do what we want and just ignore the consequences. The heck with it. Or maybe it isn't. Maybe it's just a case of we need help and assistance, in which case, as we talk about the whole notion of romance and the whole industry of romance, etc., we're delighted to welcome two fabulous folk to talk us through some of the challenges that exist with respect to catfishing, ghosting, and dealing with those aspects of urban life which aren't really good in the urban jungle, of course. The co-founder and chief executive officer of Urban Jungle is the wonderful Jimmy Williams. How are you, Jimmy?
Hi there, Alex. Thanks very much for having us on.
Excellent. And we've also got the fabulous dating expert extraordinaire. She was so good, she had to come back within 7 days to the programme. We're delighted to welcome back Cece Coleman. How are you, Cece?
I'm really well, thank you.
Excellent. Cece, if we can come to you first. I mean, some of these things that we've just been addressing in terms of ghosting, that notion of cutting off communication without so much as a by your leave, it's just bad manners, isn't it?
Yeah, I think ghosting is pretty much unacceptable now. You know, I know it's hard to maybe let someone know that, say you've been on a date with somebody and, you know, afterwards you feel that it's not right. That can be a not so fun text to send, but it's just being fair and letting that person know where they stand.
And that is ultimately down to communication, presumably. I mean, the other sort of notion in terms of these findings from Urban Jungle, such as ignoring the person you're on a date with and so on. I mean, surely, you know, if somebody's on a date with yourself, Cece, I mean, you've got to give 100% coordination to yourself and focus on that. Otherwise, as I say, it's just, well, you might as well be a narcissist.
You might as well be, yes. I agree. I mean, if you're on a date with somebody and they are not paying you attention, then that, you know, what does that say about the future relationship? If they can't do it on a first date and, you know, you might need a chat after work, you've had a bad day, and that partner can't give you what you need, then it kind of, they're sharing that. At least you know what you're getting, I guess. But yes, it wouldn't be my favourite date.
Yeah, it's not the best. I mean, Jimmy, looking to the aspect of, as I say, Urban Jungle and so on, were you shocked by these findings? Do you think, good grief, I thought we were British, we were better than this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think from our point of view, so we're an insurance provider that focuses on young customers and we just talk to them a lot and ask them lots of things. And I think we were surprised about two things probably. So one was about 60% of people told us they were actually planning to get out and go dating this summer, which we thought was great. You know, good to see people after being locked up getting out there again. But then we sort of asked about these bad habits and it was 68% of people had been ghosted before, which is, the survey also showed it was the kind of ultimate worst thing that people were worried about could happen to them. And so, yeah, it seems really unfair to us that, you know, people are getting ghosted like this. It's becoming, it's obviously a bit of a modern phenomenon, but pretty bad.
I mean, you're actually offering ghosting insurance as a way forward, which I would have thought, wow, you know, if you're going in with that sort of level, and it's like prenuptial agreements, which kind of initially people thought, what? But, you know, ghosting insurance.
Yeah, so we thought it was a bit of a fun competition for us to run over the summer. So again, just like connecting with our customers. So we're asking, actually any member of the public, don't have to be a customer, to come and submit the details of their ghosting experience. And then in return, for the first 50 people, we'll sub the date that they missed. So the average date costs you about just over 30 quid. So we'll sort of return that for those first 50 respondents, which hopefully, you know, gives you a bit of encouragement to get back out there and have that date again.
Cece, as I think we mentioned in a previous sort of piece, you obviously see things from both sides, but in terms of obviously your work as Britain's most fantastic waitress ever, you must occasionally sort of see things where you just think, I just get out of this relationship now. Are there ever any moments where you're very tempted to actually say, really, seriously, is that the best way forward?
I have definitely, I've experienced it myself and seen this. I think if you're on a date and you're not just paying attention as in terms of being, say, on your phone, but if you are checking out other people whilst you are on a date with someone, that for me is that's the red flag is waving sky high on that in that department. So yeah, I think that would be, I would love to step in at those moments, but you know, my job is to serve the food and that's it.
You're just a Saint Cece, let's face it. It should be Saint Cece. We'll move on that, buddy.
I love this, thanks.
Jimmy, back to yourself. In terms of, say, some of those habits, being on your phone too much, I mean, again, surely you don't, if you're on a date, you don't want to be checking your phone consistently, talking about your exes, goodness me, emotional baggage, etc. And of course, bad table manners. They're all irritants and they all move to sort of, you know, red flags all the way.
Yeah, I think so. I think Cece and I were actually talking about this bad habit even our friends have earlier, where they're in a bar with lots of members of the other sex that they could go on, all same sex, I guess, and go and chat to, but they're there sitting on their phone swiping left and right instead. And actually, just being present in today's world, especially after, you know, a year of not really seeing anyone, is really important. So I think that's, you know, from what people told us in the survey, so I think, you know, people were anxious about ghosting. That was 45% of people. People were second most sort of thing they were worried about or disliked was being on your phone. So don't do either of those things. Turn up for the date and be present. And I think that you'll be getting a long way.
Cece, do you think this is getting worse? Do you think that actually the pandemic has kind of impacted on people's behavior, that effectively we're just losing these social skills? And you might as well turn around and say, you're just animals.
I think obviously, you know, we have to, you know, the reality is, yes, this last year has impacted everybody, but I don't think kindness and fairness is something that should be, we should take lightly. It's, everyone knows how to do that. We've all watched movies, we've all read books, you know, it's quite obvious how to be a good human. So I think there are things that, you know, we can let slide. If you know, if you drop your food or whatever, fine. That you can make up for that, but being unfair is just, yeah, I think that's what, there's no leeway on that.
I think that's the quote of the day, basically. Cece, it's quite obvious how to be a good human. I like that. We use that frequently. Put it into all sorts of dictionary quotes, etc. Jimmy, where can people go to find out further details about Urban Jungle and how, in essence, you can actually be one of those lucky winners who could actually win ghosting insurance?
Yeah, so we've set up a website, so it's myurbanjungle.com/ghosted. And there you can find out a little bit more about the research and what we found from talking to 1,000 UK under 35s. And then also the details of how to enter the ghosting insurance competition.
And Cece, I can't ever believe that you would have ever been ghosted, but has it ever happened to yourself? I mean, I think that if you had been, then the person would have been completely insane.
I have, yes, I definitely
wow.
Ghosted.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Quite unbelievable. Jimmy, I don't know, what the hey, it's just a crazy world. Two final questions for you. We'll start off with Cece, the usual ones. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
It's been so lovely, thank you very much.
There we are, we hope to maintain those standards. So can we prevail upon you joining us again in the not too distant future? Will you come back to the Midweek Drive?
Of course.
Excellent. Jimmy, what about yourself? Good for yourself?
Yeah, super fun. Thanks very much for having us.
Although it is radio, it's nice to see that you've got a real Urban Jungle backdrop behind you as well.
Indeed,
which is fantastic.
I have, yeah.
I just thought I'd go for the standard sort of beach. Why not? You know, it's we're just on that basis. So I take it you'll also return as well, Jimmy.
Oh, absolutely, of course, yeah.
Jimmy from Urban Jungle and, of course, the fabulous Cece Coleman, patron saint of all waitresses, let's face it. Take care, be well and be happy.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
City life was getting us down. town, fix the tent on a patch of ground down by the river. Lit a fire and drank some wine. You put your jeans on top of mine. Said, come in, the water's fine down by the river. Down by the river, down by the river. Said, come in, the water's fine down by the river. Too good all night, so we took a walk in the morning light. Came across the strangest sight down by the river. Silver fish lay on its side, it was washed up by the early tide. I wonder how it died down by the river. Down by the river, down by the river. A silver fish lay on its side down by the river. To put his boat to bed, he dozed us up and he shook his head. Only foolish people go, he said, down by the river. And why do willows weep, said he? Because they're dying gradually from the waste, from the factories, down by the river. Down by the river, down by the river. Why do willows weep, said he, down by the river. And the ducks won't fly. There'll be a tear in the otter's eye down by the river. The banks will soon be black and dead. And where the otter raised his head will be a clean white skull instead down by the river. Down by the river, down by the river. The banks will soon be black and dead down by the river. Down by the river, down by the river. Down by the river.
Canals. Interestingly, they kind of emerged very much at the heart of our industrial revolution within Britain, but it seems as though they're vital for our mental well-being as well, primarily because they also connect us with nature. And to actually talk about a new Act Now for Canals campaign that's rightly being developed in order to preserve the nature and wildlife of these wonderful artifacts of humanity, certainly in Britain at least, we're delighted to welcome ecologist Stuart Moody. How are you, Stuart?
Very well, thank you, Alex. How are you?
Very good indeed. Now, Stuart, this whole notion of nature deficits in urban areas, I mean, the canal, as I mentioned, it was at the heart of obviously the Manchester Ship Canal, all sorts of other areas. There was a time where freight was transported around the country via canals. And yet they are gradually falling into disrepair and loss and so on. So talk to us about the importance of canals.
Well, yeah, they were the arteries and the veins of the Industrial Revolution, weren't they, the canals? And that's one of the reasons they're so good now for people, is because actually they get into the heart of the cities of our major cities, you know, Birmingham and Manchester and London. They've all got their canal systems that sort of penetrate right to the heart of the city. So even if you're living in the middle of a city and, you know, you've got no outdoor space, you will have a canal close by somewhere. And one of the great functions of canals now is that they bring the countryside into the city centre. So they're great for allowing people access to actually see some wildlife. I mean, I was out the other day on the canal and I saw a massive pike. I saw a family of moorhens and so many lovely big brown dragonflies. I lost count of them. So what we're asking people to do is to get out there on their canals. And we've got a survey that we'd like them to do that sort of gives them, it's called our Sense of Nature Survey. And what it will enable them to do is actually to stop and see what's around them, because sometimes I think people's inclination is just to get through and, you know, have a good vigorous walk and some good exercise. But if you stop and look around you, you'll see some surprising things. And that's what this survey will do. It'll allow people to stop and see what's around them. And by recording that, it will help us to manage the canals and to help the wildlife to make sure that the canals are as healthy and as good as they can be.
Obviously, in Lincoln, we have Brayford Pool. We have the kind of canals that work through that basis. And actually walking along the canal can, as you rightly said, Stuart, be a really effective way of actually improving our mental health as well. 63% of those surveyed actually noticed a positive improvement in their own moods after a visit to a canal. So, again, it is a way of actually connecting with nature in an urban environment, which doesn't require, you know, a kind of major trek miles away to the seaside or whatever.
Exactly that. They're so accessible, canals. I mean, my mum, she's quite elderly now, but she loves walking by canals with her dogs because they're nice and level, and you know, you're everything sort of within reach almost. There's stuff to see, and canals will link up areas of wildlife habitat, so they're great corridors for us, but also for wildlife. So that's why they are really it's a great opportunity for people to get out there and actually see some wildlife. And it's there for them. And sometimes people don't know they exist because they're quite well hidden sometimes, especially in cities, and you don't even know they're there. But once you do get onto them, they're a surprising place to be.
And a wonderful way of reducing stress, anxiety, and blood pressure. So we talk about hashtag Act Now for Canals. This is, as we said, a joint project between the Canal and River Trust, a Sense in Nature survey, and so on. Is it important to literally, as the campaign suggests, act now, otherwise we risk losing our canals forever?
Well, managing canals is a big challenge because they're 200 years old, many of them, over 200 years old. They take a lot of looking after, and that's what we do at the Canal and River Trust. We look after 2,000 miles of these wonderful, wonderful assets, but we can't do it on our own. We need people there to help us. So, yeah, by Act Now for Canals, we'll raise people's awareness of the fact that canals are there and they're there for people to use, and people can get involved. They can engage with us. They can volunteer with us, and it's a great opportunity for people to contribute to something that's a really worthwhile part of their community, which they might not know about now. So if they get out there, do our survey, and they act now for canals, they can really help us.
And in further details, how can they actually sort of find out more data from the Canal and River Trust, or maybe even join the Canal and River Trust?
Well, that's what we would like people to do, to engage with us. So if they can go to our website, canalandrivertrust.org, I think it is, and there's all the information they need about their locality. They can see, you know, what's happening in and around Lincoln, if that's where they are. You've got the lovely river with them there, haven't you, that it goes through the city. And they can find out what's going on around them, but also what we're doing nationally, because we're a national network. So, you know, there's lots of information there, and it's there on the website. So if they want more information, they want to know how to get involved, go to the website.
And you can be one of the 8.8 million people who live within 1 kilometre of canals dotted up and down the country. Truly a sort of general urban jewel that hopefully we've shone a little bit of a light on today, Stuart. Stuart, it's been awesome connecting with your good self. Once again, keep on keeping on, and dare I say it, happy boating.
Thank you, Alex. Have a great day and get out onto your local canal.
All of a sudden, I could hear somebody whistling from right behind me. I turned around and she said, "Why do you always end up down at Nick's Cafe?" I said, I don't know. The wind just kind of pushed me this way. She said, "Hang the rich."
She said, "You like it now, but you'll learn to love it later."